Sunday, October 9th, was a jewel of a fall day, blue and gold. I woke up early. Once more, Lyndon had not slept well. I think it is the mounting tension of the approaching trip. These last two mornings, I've made a rediscovery, the wonderful world of the early morning. I've been up at 7:30, walking in the dew in the fresh new day. There's a feeling of exhilaration about it that's headier than wine. Lyndon asked me to get in and go with him to the Reagan with a paper cup of coffee in my hand. I said, yes, but you must be sure to get me back in time to dress for church. His joy is so apparent, it's as nourishing as eating. In looking at the crops and the deer and asking Dale Meeks and Dale Malachek constant questions on the talking machine about the fences and the deer food. He was absolutely deaf to my reminders that it was 9:25, 9:20. And when we finally drove up at home at 9:15, I was furious. How could I possibly bathe and dress and be ready for church in 10 minutes? Actually, I think he rather enjoys it, seeing how quickly he can get ready and making me do the same. With a combination of resentment and amusement, I hurried madly. Was in the car by 9, and we were only 5 minutes late, with Lucy and Pat and Marie and Jake, to St. Francis Xavier, which is absolutely jammed, including a few crying babies. Lucy looked a little wan. She has sounded so for more than a week now. After church, we paused at the door, and soon we were being greeted by all the congregation, the Simon Bergs and Frederick Bergs, and various Kleins and Weinheimers. And then, with Lyndon driving, over the dance and Martin ranches. There are still sunflowers, a few little purple asters. The snow on the mountain is gone, and a sprinkling of yellow flowers in the pasture. Lyndon said, let's have some company for dinner, and began to rattle off the people that he liked. We asked Marie to start phoning them. So quickly, with only 6 hours' notice, does a dinner party of 14 get put together at our house, with people coming from anywhere from 15 miles to 200 miles away. And then, at 11:30, with considerable determination, I got out of the car. For my wildflower hunting, I'd arranged with Betty to take off a few hours of searching with me. This is the enormous bonus of getting up early and going to church early. The whole day unfurls in front of you a long, rich possession. When I reached Betty's, she said, let's take Tom along with us. He knows more about it than I do. So the three of us set out, with Jerry driving, and in their pastures we found some of the tall daisies that grow from 4 to 8 feet high in the country roadsides, with bright yellow flowers about the size of a silver dollar on all sides of the stem, a showy, spectacular splash of color. Yes, these were just what I wanted. And in one of their pastures, we saw a whole hillside full of purple gay feather, a spike from 2 to 3 feet high that is a solid mass of tiny purple flowerets. They were past blooming, almost going to seed, but not quite ready. We tried getting some of the seed, and then Tom took his knife and dug up the bulb from which this plant grows, and he promised that he and Betty would dig up a large number of bulbs and plant them out for me sometime this winter when they're dormant. Next, we drove up the Blanco Road, took along a photographer, and got some pictures of the lovely expanses of this brilliant yellow daisy on the tall stalk. This is Sandy Witt Greer, with appreciation and hopes of more. It made the ride to Blanco a joy. When they're going to seed, Betty and Tom promised to get James and gather some of the seed for us, put out along the fence rows and the roadsides in the 80 acres. Meanwhile, I had called Jewel Malachek to see if she would pick up Betty's daughter, whom we'd left at home, and take Clary and her boys and Nan to the swimming pool so we could keep on riding and working with a clear conscience. Back at the ranch, we drove down to the birthplace and then to the entrance and then west up into the 80 acres of the dance, putting out in each place some of the seeds we'd collected and talking about where would be good places to put more. It was 3 o'clock before we returned, ravenous, to the main house. We'd been in touch with Lyndon, so we'd get there together. And we all sat down at the table, Lyndon, the staff, and the Weinheimers and I, and Pat and Lucy, with the delicious sense of having had a good morning, and I with the feeling how nice it was to have neighbors who knew as much about the wildflowers, liked them, and were willing to help me with them. Betty and I also talked about how good it would be, and it was she who originated the idea, that the local Boy Scout troop would plant a lot of the wildflower seeds around their Boy Scout hut. This is fast getting to be an addiction of mine, these wildflowers of the Edwards Plateau. After lunch, I took a rest, but not Lyndon. He continued riding with the Weinheimers, talking stock. I got up about 5 when I heard that the John Hills were flying in to the hangar, and on the way out to meet them, ran into the Morrisons and the Heaths and the Rubies and the Melvin Winters and the Don Thomases, who were arriving in a caravan. So it wound up by 2 carloads of us, setting out to meet Lyndon on the Reagan. Lyndon always has the optimistic belief that 10 people can get into one car, and he wants them all around him. This time there were 15, and we couldn't quite make it. So A.W. drove the station wagon and carried me and all the ladies and Jesse, while Lyndon, who had never been out of a car with the top down all day long except for church and lunch, continued his tour. He is a sun worshiper, a land lover, and so indeed am I, except I like it better on foot. I told the John Hills how nearly I had come to reaching their ranch on one of my river walks, and that I particularly wanted to see their Indian cave. I asked if the drawings were just geometrical, or if they were stick men. "Oh, no," said John. "There are several animals you can clearly tell, one very good buffalo. Unfortunately, during a flood, trees and debris crammed the cave to its mouth, and in an attempt to clean it out, the ranch hands had set fire to it. The walls of the cave had become blackened, and some of the drawings obliterated. I promised myself to go and see them." Melvin and Nita said they had closed down their tours of exotic animals after Labor Day, but promised me I could come and see the dinosaur tracks any time I wanted to. My own small piece of the world is so rich with things I want to do and see. We spent the time of the long shadows riding around. The big red deer is getting really dangerous, and Dale Meeks and Dale Malachek both warn us against going even too close to the enormous high fence. Sometimes he will charge it, they say. He might even possibly break it. The Texas Longhorns, with their great spread of horns, looked enormously picturesque. And the buffalo, too, when we saw them at a distance across the pasture, looked quite at home. Everything that ever lived here, I welcome back with a great satisfaction. My liking for the truly exotic game, the seeker from Japan, the phalladeer from England, the axis from, I believe, India, the huge blue Nilgai antelope from Africa, is not much. I'd like to see them in their own habitat sometime. But here on the Edwards Plateau, I prefer what is native. The days are getting shorter, and I begrudge them. My spirits always begin to lift about December the 23rd, when they once more begin to lengthen little by little. When the last ray was gone from the sky, and sunset is early now, about 6:15, we went back to the main ranch. And while the guests were sitting around having a drink, I went up to see Lucy, curled up on the bed, and had a good long talk with her. The first 4 days in Austin were sheer purgatory, she said, with a line of tourists driving past her house, pointing and looking, and everybody at the grocery store and the laundromat, anywhere she went, asking for autographs. And then it began to stop. And now it was just fine. Everybody left her alone, except all of her many friends. And she and Pat were loving Austin. We'll never get Kimberly back. She loves that little dog so much. She gives so much time to her, and there's so much happiness between them. I wouldn't have the heart to ask for her back, not even for Pocosa's companion and Blanco's. The thank you notes have been superb, but not enough. She has quality, that child, but not dogged discipline. She was hostess at the little table, and I had Judge Heath on my right and dear Melvin on my left. He's always one of the closest ones in my thinking. And we were a full table of 14. And the evening for me and for Lyndon, I'm sure, had that precious feeling of something that would not be soon repeated. Tomorrow it would be back to Washington for a hectic week, and then this 17-day trip. So this was a golden interlude, a little personal gem, before our job claims us again. During our wildflower ride, we'd stopped at Grandma Berg's, and she'd given us great armfuls of the beautiful purple asters that grow like a bush in her yard. She calls them mountain daisies. She'd promised to divide them with me in the spring when they came up. I'd brought the armload home and arranged them in a white ironstone pitcher on the coffee table, where they were lovely, and dreamed of the time when I'd have a mass of them down at the Birthplace House for October bouquets.